Join the conversation. It's the Richard Eade Show, Monday through Friday, right here on KVSF 101.5, the voice of Santa Fe. Streaming on SantaFe.com. Call 424-4550.
All right, 6 minutes after 9 o'clock, kind of all over the place here today between O'Keefe Museum and Dennis Hopper Days. And now we're going to talk to Dr. Lustig, who just came back from Nepal. We'll talk to Mariel Nanasi later about the PNM-PRC ruling. Hopefully, Dr. Joel Boyd will join us at some point this morning. He's very upset with the police department, so a lot going on today. Dr. Andrew Lustig has just returned from Nepal. He's one of the founders of Global Outreach Doctors. So you just like sliding into home, sliding back into Santa Fe after a period in Nepal. And nice to meet you, and thanks for coming in.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Welcome to the show. Get a little closer to the microphone.
Alrighty.
All right. So let's just start out with basically you're one of the founders of Global Outreach Doctors. What is that?
Global Outreach Doctors is an immediate response medical team that deploys search and rescue canine assets and also adds to their mission future water purification, food delivery, and sort of infrastructure after we leave.
So you guys are basically, emergency response, different types of doctors?
Yes, a wide range? Yes, I should clarify that while we respond to emergencies, we also provide global health initiatives in different locations around the world so that we're not just sort of sitting waiting for some disaster to happen, that we've worked together. Some of the doctors and I have worked together on several continents. Okay. Most of our staff are medical doctors. I am a naturopath, but most of our staff are medical doctors. We have homeopaths. We have naturopaths. We have paramedics, nurse practitioners, nurses. And then we have, all the support people. So those are interpreters, drivers, and so on. Staff, we have a 22-person staff in Nepal.
And equipment?
And equipment and medicine. And, St. Vincent's Foundation supported us. And, every time there's something that happens, I back my SUV up and my truck to the loading dock, and Robert Glick says, take what you need. And so we went with several hundred pounds of medicine in addition to more than 1,000 pounds of medicine from my partner on the ground there.
All right. The first earthquake happened which day?
I believe that was Saturday.
Okay. 2 weeks ago?
Yes.
Okay. When did you arrive at Kathmandu?
Well, we arrived Wednesday at 6 a.m., and I will tell you that our goal is to arrive within 48 hours. And this is sort of an issue because to get on a ground that's 15,000 miles away, mm-hmm. it's really hard because, physically it takes 24 hours to get there. And commercial flights, private flights, and military flights are the way to go. We're not financed yet to get private, but we're working on that.
Right. And then they have to prioritize who's going to be allowed to land at an airport that's been damaged, right? It's just not like open for everybody. They have to say, first of all, be Red Cross or the military. This is what we need. This is who gets to land first, right?
Absolutely. And there's sort of, a schedule and etiology of how these things happen. The airport is sometimes damaged. And so the Hueys and the helicopters that can land, that military people can come in and start repairing.
Right.
And then they sort of, if you can sneak in on a C-130, you might be the next one on the ground. The problem with getting in on a C-130, which they do take civilians and they do take NGOs, is that you have to wait for that entire plane to fill up with medical supplies. So you might not get on the ground for 5 days.
Right.
So
you went in on a C-130?
No, we did not. We went commercial, and I do believe we were one of the first small groups to get in. Of course, large state and government have their own airplanes, and they got in.
Okay. Describe to us when you got to Kathmandu what you saw.
Well, unlike the Philippines, when I landed in when I left Manila for the typhoon in Tacloban, the plane flew over a country that you could clearly see everything. It was flattened. There were no palm trees left. And, with Kathmandu, and I've been there before, when you fly in, you don't really see as much as what you might have seen when you fly into Haiti. And it's just sort of geographic, the way the mountains are and just the way you're coming in. Mm-hmm. But we landed. We had a dog team with us. The airport was somewhat functioning, but not fully functioning. Of course, you know, the military are present. You see, you know, teams of uniformed personnel from different parts of the country. And then you're sort of in this airport and you're wondering, how am I going to get to my base camp? Our base camp was going to be out of Helping Hands Hospital, a hospital that was founded and built by a good friend of mine. And basically, you know, you get on rickshaws, you get on the back of little motor scooters, and sometimes you get in the back of a pickup truck, however you can get there. And they do repair roads first that come out of airports because they know that's where the world is
flying. That's where the assistance is coming from. Yeah. But you also had all of the medicine and everything else. You had to get into town, right?
You know, I'm really happy that one of the people that flew with me is Dane Abruzzo out of Albuquerque. He was our logistics chief. And he's also a paramedic. And between his muscles and mine, you know, we carried hundreds of pounds of medicine onto that plane and hand-carried it off.
When you got into town, so you go into the road's repaired or partially repaired. I mean, we saw pictures of, you know, 4 or 5 feet maybe, you know, when the road split down the middle between one lane and the other, the difference in the level.
We were on that road, actually. We rode on the higher port, a part of that road. But I know which road you're talking about. Yeah.
And then because, I mean, just the way they do construction in that part of the world is basically rock or brick stacked up. It's no inner construction. There's no rebar. A lot of times there's probably no mortar. I mean, was it just leveled?
So, you know, the mechanism is incredibly important in the various disasters I've been to. For instance, in Tacloban in the Philippines for the typhoon, so you had this mechanism of enormous wind and rain and ocean.
Right.
So what it did is it came in, it dragged everything in its way and flattened the place, and there weren't really a lot of buildings. Most people live in sort of little huts and, right, and so on. And without getting into too much detail, you know, you can see dead bodies everywhere. And when you go to a place that has an earthquake that has a lot of buildings, they're buried primarily.
Right.
And so the construction in developing countries is pretty much similar around the world in most of the places, and they stack brick after brick with, as you said, no support.
Right.
And so what you have is you don't have caverns and spaces for the dogs, our search dogs, to find live victims. They're just flattened. They're dust.
Yeah.
Now, on a rare occasion, there were some live finds.
Right.
But for the most part, unless the buildings have some level of structure to them, you're not leaving space for a body, for a victim. And in the way our dogs work is that if they find a live victim, they start digging. If they find, which is called HRD dogs, human remains dogs, they will lay down on that spot and not move. And so we did not have a live find, and there were very few that were found.
But some 4 or 5 days afterwards, right?
Some even longer than that. There was a 102-year-old woman that was found. The second quake most recently produced a live find in one of the remote villages. You know what sort of happens in one case was that a motorcycle had sort of propped itself up between two pieces of cement, and somebody was underneath that and had space, and that person was removed.
Dr. Andrew Lustig is our guest. He's from Global Outreach Doctors, just returned on Sunday from Nepal. So you guys set up, you were in this Helping Hands Hospital?
So, you know, there are always surprises. There's nothing that goes as planned, and so you have to sort of move with the flow. My partner group, Helping Hands Hospital, who I've worked with in the past, hadn't informed me that there was some – actually, they couldn't inform me. I was on an airplane when it happened. But there were some cracks in their building, and so all of their staff moved down to the first floor, and they were somewhat not operational, which means I have to sort of move to Plan B.
Right.
And Plan B was, we have this team. We're going to put our hands to use. This hospital's somewhat damaged. Let's start working in other areas. And in actuality, most of our work was in remote areas, traveled by 4x4s, you know, over rivers and through streams and over cracked roads, because most of the casualties, with the exception of one particular area in Kathmandu that we were actually housed in, which had a lot of collapsed buildings, most of the victims were from remote villages, and that's where we primarily worked.
Were you up to all the base camps, all the hikers? Of course, that was a big news story of all the hikers lost up on the mountain from the avalanches and the slides. Did you get up that higher?
So, you know, technical rescue efforts in Mount Everest are well beyond our skill level. Sure. At this point, we're a brand new company. I do plan on having technical rescue people that can work in avalanches. And as we build our team, we add different skills and sort of, you know, being a brand new company, you know, I've got the dog people, I've got the mental health people, I've got the homeopaths and naturopaths, and I've got the MDs and RNs. But as we work towards building our organization, we will be some of the people that work in that kind of technical rescue. Very specialized, requires very specialized aircraft and very different kind of skills.
So after the initial earthquake, which was over a 7.73, something like that, then a number of aftershocks, and then we had the second one, which was like 6.5, and of course aftershocks probably still happening. I don't know, is there a way to describe kind of the mental state, the overall spirit of the people around Kathmandu?
Well, just to start with that question about aftershocks, you know, our team would get up in the morning and they'd say, did you feel the aftershock? And I slept through every one of them. Right. But everybody said, oh, the bed was shaking. Did you feel it? I said, no, I was sleeping. The thing about sort of the progress of any disaster is you deal with the really acute issues of life-saving. And then you're sort of dealing with the walking wounded, those that we treated, which were lacerations, head wounds, broken bones, fractures, and muscle skeletal injuries, you know, gastrointestinal stress. And then, you know, when you get to the mental health portion, which is sort of critical to get to, sort of this 24-hour rule of trying to debrief these people, it's critical. I mean, we had a young child that we were treating who did not have many physical injuries, but the only reason she was alive is because her mother laid on top of her and saved her. Her mother died. And so what this child needed wasn't antibiotics or homeopathic remedies. What this child needed was mental health. And unfortunately, in this deployment, our mental health people were working in the Middle East, and so they were not there. However, we are putting a mental health team together to go shortly, and it is critically important.
Dr. Andrew Lustig is our guest from Global Outreach Doctors, just back from Nepal. Take a time out. We'll come back. We'll talk about what people here can do, what people throughout the world can do for the relief efforts with the doctor. 18 minutes after 9 o'clock. We stream live worldwide, santafe.com. We'll be right back here on KVSF 101.5, the voice of Santa Fe.
We're coming right back to the Richard Eads Show on KVSF 101.5, the voice of Santa Fe. Streaming on santafe.com. Call 424-4550.
When buying a home in Santa Fe, it's location, location, location. Darlene Street is a savvy real estate agent who knows the city different. Click SantaFeRealEstateProperty.com.
Sotheby's International Realty, 505-982-6207.
Kathleen, come and listen to my idea for a new ad. This weekend only, huge shipping discounts for Santa Fe businesses. What do you think?
Dell. We offer our regular commercial customers a 20% discount on packing and shipping every day of the year.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. How about great service, special business discounts?
Yes, dear.
Pack mail on Guadalupe and Montezuma. On the web at WeShipSantaFe.com. Compulsive, overprotective, even anal retentive.
Will the compliments never end?
Do you know the true story of Timothy Leary and psychedelic exploration?
Hi, this is Mark Perry, hypnotherapist and life fulfillment coach.
What if I told you the true gateway to psychedelic consciousness is simply a matter of the mind?
Check out amatteroftheMind.com and join me this Saturday at 10 a.m.
with Joanna Harcourt Smith, former lover and voice of Timothy Leary.
On my weekly show, A Matter of the Mind, on KVSF 101.5, the voice of Santa Fe and SantaFe.com.
The Albuquerque Isotopes Homestand continues this weekend, and there's something for everybody. On Friday, the first 3,000 fans will receive a pennant courtesy of Coca-Cola. On Saturday, post-game fireworks will blast off into the sky courtesy of Wells Fargo Bank. And Sunday, it's Cap Day. The first 2,500 fans will receive a hat courtesy of Calibers. For tickets, call 924-BALL or visit the Isotopes Park box office. Albuquerque Isotopes Baseball, the best family entertainment in town.
We would like to invite you to join us every Saturday morning at 8 o'clock, right here on 101.5, the voice of Santa Fe, for Bob's Botanical Broadcast. We are a local, organic, homegrown gardening talk show, and you never know what might crop up in conversation. This show is brought to you by the lovely folks at Aguafria Nursery, located at 1409 Aguafria Street, close to the heart of Santa Fe. We are a local, family-owned and operated business, getting dirty since 1975.
Join San Felipe Casino for the $125,000 Trucks, Bucks, and Bikes giveaway. Fabulous cash drawings will be held each Sunday at 2, 4, and 6 p.m. On our Trucks, Bucks, and Bikes bonus Sundays, you could drive away in a new truck, a 2015 Indian motorcycle, or with $10,000 cash. Don't miss your chance to win big at San Felipe Casino. I-25, exit 252 between Albuquerque and Santa Fe, where big wins come in small packages.
Spring, the time of year when new life pulls free of parting winter chill. We have a new collection of robes, India block print, organic waffle weave, and linen, as well as bamboo gowns and pajamas. It's time to rethink your home with new pillows and throws or sheets. Our textiles are direct from our European vendors or customized by our co-ops in South America or Asia. This is Barbara Lenahan at Pandora's to help your house be special, but ordinary? Sorry, we just don't do it.
You're listening to The Richard Eads Show on KVSF 101.5, the voice of Santa Fe. Streaming on santafe.com. Call 424-4550.
I can see his light. If he can sparkle, he may land.
23 minutes after 9 o'clock, 9:30, we'll talk to Robin Roffer. She's an author. She has a really cool book about, called The No Fear Career, 12 Steps to Becoming a Courageous Leader. Right now, we're visiting with Dr. Andrew Lustig, one of the founders of Global Outreach Doctors, and Leanne is here, too. Did I say something funny? Do I amuse you?
Always. It's an inside joke. We'll catch you later on.
Okay, all right. Anyway, so Dr. Lustig, Global Outreach Doctors, he's just returned from Nepal. We've been describing the horrible scene in Kathmandu and the countryside of Nepal. So, Doc, how, moving forward, you said you still have staff in Kathmandu and the surrounding areas?
Yes, yeah, so we continue to have staff on the ground, though the initial deployment of 10 to 14 days was sort of a critical period. We have several MDs, medical doctors on the ground, and Dr. Courtney is serving as our medical director there. We have a surgeon, Dr. Sari, who just arrived. We have potentially several other homeopaths, acupuncturists coming, and there's a few other doctors, yeah.
Okay. You guys have a cool website. I was looking at it yesterday. It's interesting, your story, your mission. Why don't you give that website out if people, you know, because you're going to be here a few more minutes, people want to find out more.
Our website is globaloutreachdoctors.org. And my good friend Robert at Rinse Design did a beautiful job, donated all of it. He's awesome, yeah.
All right. The nature of your organization, how are you guys able to do what you do? As you say, you know, basically fly to other parts of the world with tons of equipment and medicine and highly trained physicians to help people. How do you fund yourselves?
Well, that's a great question. And that, of course, is how we survive, because not everything is donated. We live on donations made to our website at globaloutreachdoctors.org. We also have a GoFundMe, Global Outreach Doctors. None of us are paid. We don't have any large grants as of yet. We have no corporate sponsorships. Those are coming. But right now, we just rely on the people that listen to your show and people that read the newspaper and want to help the people of Nepal. All of the money that comes in to us is directly used to support our teams on the ground delivering medicine and food. We delivered 1,000 pounds of food to 100 families in rural regions that were not able to get food. We're also working on solar and wind-powered clean water, because the infrastructure going forward is completely damaged and needs our help. So we're looking at solar water pumps. We're looking at clean water. We're looking at food distribution.
What is the could you estimate, if nothing else happens, if we have no more 6+ earthquakes, horrible aftershocks, can you estimate, based on your experience in other regions, how long it may be before Kathmandu, parts of the region, get the infrastructure back where they can really start to, you know, do large-scale repair? I mean, right now the airport is only open part-time, right? Not open for big cargo planes because of the weight, and there's not a lot of heavy equipment. Will they be able to recover in the next year start to?
So, of course, the point of entry where the funnel point where everybody comes in is a tiny little airport. I've flown into it before. And, in fact, there were several planes that were redirected after circling the airport, you know, back to, you know, thousands of miles away. They just couldn't land. There was such a queue of airplanes, and they can only accommodate a certain amount of large airplanes. The C-130s need the entire tarmac, and you can't have anybody in the way.
Right.
So, you know, as far as rebuilding, you know, you're relying on a little airport that can only bring in so much traffic. And
no overland. I mean, overland is pretty much out of the
question.
Well,
of course, you know, some of the planes flew back to Delhi. And, you know, you can drive from Delhi to Nepal. It's a very long drive. But the overland, the roads are very damaged. So once you do get supplies into the airport, now you're transporting them in smaller vehicles on really rough roads. I mean, we went over rivers and we looked down at ravines and we can't imagine large trucks getting through there. It's all going to be kind of parceled out in smaller. And, you know, the devastation there, and it reminds me of sort of to some degree Haiti and the Philippines, years and years later,
right. So
slow, the progress of rebuilding. I mean, in the Philippines, you had to take all of this demolition and get it off the island because basically what do you do with all these buildings? You know, fortunately, in places that are not landlocked, you know, you're going to have to truck all of these crushed buildings out of the way. And I will tell you that we've seen brick-making factories, you know, gearing up because, you know, you see their factories are just people, like, making bricks. Mm-hmm. But you can see that this is an enormous task. It takes a long time. And if you look at before and after pictures, you know, years later of Haiti or even a year later in Tacloban, the Philippines, it's slow.
Right, right. 3 weeks ago, the population of Kathmandu was what?
I don't know.
Is it 100,000 or 500,000?
I don't know the statistic. I was working on something else at the time, but it's important.
Yeah. I was just wondering, you know, kind of the scope of getting that all back together. So best thing people can do, donate to you guys. You'll funnel that along.
We're supplying medicine, doctors, food, and all types of infrastructure. So we would really appreciate your donations. Of course, there are many great organizations working on the ground there, and we've worked with some of them.
United Nations, a big presence in Kathmandu right afterwards?
Absolutely. We received our direction from the Ministry of Health, the UN, the cluster meetings. These are all sort of typical, you know, party favors that happen in these locations. You go and you get your instructions and you look at maps and you see what the intel is, and then you gathered some of that intel from people walking on the street and some from big organizations. So the UN's presence is important.
All right. Once again, the website?
GlobalOutreachDoctors.org.
All right. Thanks for coming by and making time for us. Really, really do appreciate it. Sounds like, I mean, I'd like to say you have a fascinating job, a fascinating life, but I mean, you go into these places and I would imagine it takes a lot of time to emotionally recover after you see the things that, like you say, you want to go into great detail, but the road is littered with people who didn't make it.
Well, probably in a week or two, my adrenaline will drop down and I'll feel all the things that you just said.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
All right. Come back after this break. Like I said, we're hopping all over the